your entire life, when you are told who you are rather than who you aspire to be, your path may look glorified to many, but to yourself, you feel empty. And trying to fit the pieces of the puzzle, you follow the herd and find the only thing that you should have aspired for, taught, and believed in was for yourself to be happy. Pretty poetic lines to end 2023, I know, but I want to tell you, my dear listeners, that following your heart takes a lot of strength, and our guest for the last episode of the year exemplifies this. Kanmika is a postdoctoral researcher studying the memory of mosquitoes at ETH in Zurich. The heart of his research lies in understanding how these insects retain our scent, enabling them to move forward, delving into intricate molecular works of their brain and formation of their memories. Originally hailing from Turkey, Kan's passion for insects blossomed while he was working with fruit flies. Beyond his scientific buzzwords, he's deeply engaged in science communication and boasts a talent for capturing captivating moments as an award-winning photographer. What drew me to interview Kan was his incredible zeal and passion towards creating content as a science communicator. His social media reels and work is straight out perfect, and he has mastered the art of delivering content to the masses. Currently a verified content creator and holding more than 14,000 followers, Kan creates an impact with his work daily by sharing his science for all. This is a conversation you wouldn't want to miss.
Hi Kan, I already introduced you, but like, can you just give listeners like a 2 to 3 line introduction about yourself? What got you into research? And how is it going so far?
Okay, hello everyone. It's a pleasure to be here. Thanks, Mahima, for inviting me to your lovely podcast. So I am originally from Turkey. I've been doing my postdoctoral studies in Switzerland at ETH Zurich University. And I did my master's and PhD on Drosophila melanogaster. And recently I switched to mosquitoes, and I'm mainly studying how mosquitoes' memory is functioning together with their olfactory system. I was not so much interested in the research from my childhood years, but the last year of my high school, I got a biology teacher. She was really keen in, you know, advertising or showing how biology functions actually with some cool experiments. And until that moment, for me, biology was a class that I have to memorize a lot of words in Latin. So it was really boring until I realized how cool it can be. And after I got introduced to biology by her, I decided suddenly to choose molecular biology as a major in university. Yeah,
but molecular biology is really difficult. Like for me, I used to run away from molecular biology whenever there were experiments in the laboratory related to it. So like, I have to give you that it's really, really difficult to do molecular biology, and it requires a lot of patience, right? Like you have to be very patient.
I think it's not more difficult than anything else. If you want to be good at something, it's always difficult. Yeah. And if you're in the right place with right people, right professors and so on, I think they can even teach very complex things very easily and make life easier. So like molecular biology itself, I wouldn't say that it's more complex than physics or chemistry or biology or ecology in general. Of course, the way that we conduct experiments are different, but during the university and practical courses, they teach you like how to do experiments, how to troubleshoot. So there's like a really good troubleshooting method behind molecular biology. If something is not working, you know what to do to make it work and so on. So in that sense, I find molecular biology I would say less complex comparing with behavior in animals, for example, because there maybe observations are easier, but to make, to set a behavioral essay with so many different parameters is always a challenge.
It's always a challenge. And can you tell the listeners a little bit more about your research currently? Because you work with mosquitoes. That is a very, in India, I don't think many people work on mosquitoes here as much as we work on Drosophila, because, maintaining them and studying them is way, way easier. So why mosquitoes? I wanted to ask that. And what's so different about your research now as compared to when you were researching with Drosophila melanogaster?
All right, so that's a nice question. So during my master's and PhD, I worked on Drosophila, and mainly because I was quite interested in insects, and Drosophila has genetic tools. So you can do molecular biology, you can create mutants, and you can look at how these mutants are reacting in behavioral experiments. So this, I find it very exciting, because before that I was working with bacteria, for example, but then these things you don't see how they react as easily as Drosophila. So seeing animals' behavior was changing for me. That was like the main reason I wanted to do research on Drosophila. And I mainly worked on the olfactory system during my PhD, and it was more at the neuron level. So what I mean by that, I was interested in the development of Drosophila. I was interested how neurons are born, how they are targeting, what receptor they are choosing. Like, in simple words, I was really interested in understanding what makes one neuron different than another neuron. And olfactory system was a great place to look at that question.
Yeah.
And but at the end of my PhD, I decided that I've been in Drosophila field for so long and I need some new challenges, because after working with Drosophila so many years, you get better at that. You get very familiarized and so on, but your research is still Drosophila. So whatever you find at the end, you have to justify why you are doing this research, actually.
Mm-hmm.
And I was interested in all sorts of insects, to be honest. And mosquito was one of them, mainly because of the diseases that they are transmitting. And the other point is they're spreading all around the world. So this like neglected tropical diseases start becoming more and more common in Europe and rest of the world. So I wanted to do research with an organism that is becoming a model organism. So we are getting transgenic mosquitoes like we have, like transgenic Drosophila, and there's CRISPR, and they do a lot of neurobiology. They can use some antibodies and look at the brain, how the brain of mosquito is functioning, how they are responding to certain odors. So they can do very sophisticated experiments, which are not possible in so many other insect species. So like mosquito is something between Drosophila and an unknown insect at the moment. And the more researchers we have in the field, the faster it progress. So yeah, I mean, mainly the reason was I wanted to have an impact of my research directly, instead of justifying why I'm doing the research.
Yeah, and I also wanted to talk about, like, I was going through your LinkedIn. Really cool stuff you've done. You are an award-winning photographer, if I'm not wrong, right?
Thank you very much. Yeah.
Yeah, that's really dope. And you are also a verified creator on Instagram, which is, again, really cool. I wanted to ask, like, I was going through your LinkedIn and there was this, like, gap year thing that you have mentioned. Now, I am a very big advocate of mental health in academia. So can you tell a little bit about why you took that gap year? And what thoughts do you have about mental health and academia? How do they go hand in hand?
All right, so To be honest, like I didn't have a very stressful PhD. I had an excellent PI. He was very supportive. The lab environment was very friendly. And also, like I didn't have any financial issue because I was doing my PhD in Switzerland. And in Switzerland, PhD salaries maybe are the lowest in the country, but still they give you some money to survive. So you can rent an apartment, you can still go on holidays, make some savings. So in that sense, I was not getting any money from my family since I'm, I don't know, like 22, 23. And when I started my PhD, I didn't also have that problem. I know that people with PhD in many countries, their salaries, I mean, some they don't have salary, some have salary, but it's insufficient. So it forced them to do extra jobs and so on. Then it can be very frustrating. But to be honest, I was lucky on that sense. Like I didn't have any problem. And I was also happy in the sense that how my research ended up. So I was able to publish in good journals. And yeah, I think I had a fruitful PhD, but I just realized to produce that data, that results, I had to work a lot still. And it was like almost nonstop working, especially for a few years at the beginning of my PhD. And also when finishing up, like writing a thesis and writing an article and still doing experiments for reviewers is a big, big challenge. And there was also Corona. So all of this at the end made me decide that, okay, I want to have like 6 months of gap, something like that, and travel the world. So together with my partner, actually, we got this bold decision. And we said like, okay, we will leave Switzerland. We will just like go around the world. We had some savings. And when we finish our saving, we come back to, I mean, actually, we go to another country. I do a postdoc. She finds a job and then we continue our life. And well, luck was on our side. I got this position at ETH. I told them that I want to have a gap for 6 months and then I want to start afterwards. They were also fine with that. And that gap extended to a year because I was doing some voluntary projects. I was also finishing up my papers. So it wasn't like a holiday. I was still kind of working for my former lab at the same time. But it helped me to travel and completely refresh my mind, and I come back to academia with a refreshed mind afterwards. So I think doing holidays is very, very important, and the longer the gap is better. But maybe a year is too long for some people, because on academia you should be always keep an eye on the new articles and so on. So for me, that was like a little challenging when I come back. After that long year, I was like, oh my God.
You were still hung on to the education phase.
Exactly. Yeah. but I'm glad that I did. And those years will not come back. I'm at the place that I am right now. And people are sometimes always thinking so much about the future. They don't have any gap in their life. They do one thing and then another thing. But I think it's really, really important to just like calm down, see what you are doing, what you achieve, be proud of yourself, and then go to the next stage afterwards.
Yeah, that is so true, because academia has this culture of publish or perish, right? So you are just constantly in the idea that you have to just publish as many articles as you can, simultaneously doing projects in the laboratory, which is just a robotic behavior. So yeah, I mean, and also Khan, you're a content creator, right? So why did you become a content creator is like my question, because like I have seen a lot of content creators on Instagram in general, but your feed is really dope and it talks about mosquitoes. A lot of people have covered you on their podcasts and in articles, but why content creation? I don't think anybody has asked you this, but so I wanted to ask you that. Yeah.
Well, I become content creator without knowing what content creator means. When I started science communication was like 4 or 5 years ago on Instagram. And I had an Instagram account before, but I was only using it for photography. So I think in 2017, I bought a camera and I started shooting everything. So that was like, I was experimenting with my camera and I was posting those photos people were liking, but they were not engaging that much. And I was trying to understand, well, should I become a photographer or continue my science career? I was that much interested in photography, seriously. But I didn't realize that there was some value in the photos that I take until I wrote a caption about science. And it was about a photo that I took in Africa. There was a reptile, and then I took a photo of that. And I just wrote like what we know about this, why this is interesting. So when I have some content, some caption, then people were very interested. And a lot of my friends, they never look at what I do, what I post. They were like, maybe you should do this. I mean, because we really enjoy the way that you wrote the story. So, I mean, you wrote the story in a very simple way that a boring story can be fun. And they really encouraged me. And I say like, okay, I'm going to try one more. And I did like 3 or 4 more posts like that. Right. And people were engaging. They were like, oh, keep up the good work and so on. I was like, okay, I will change my name. I think my Instagram name was something related with photography and Lausanne, because I was living in Lausanne. I deleted all the previous photos. And I decided like, okay, I need to find a name. I will do this seriously. I found this name of Slice of Science. I made the logo. A friend of mine made the logo for me. And from that moment, I took it very seriously without caring what people think about it. And it became very successful because, especially like 4 or 5 years ago, there weren't many science communicators. This wasn't a real thing.
Yeah.
So we didn't have reels, we didn't have all these tools on social media to make interactive and entertaining posts. So I was just like sharing a photo and then writing down something scientific. And I realized this got recognition and I started getting more and more followers. And I mean, the whole content creation thing started like that, because then I said that I want to be successful. So what should I do? Like, you should post frequently. I mean, there are certain rules. If you don't know those rules, like in academia, publish or perish. I think on Instagram it's like
you have to
post
poet.
Or perish.
Yeah.
Exactly. So you have to be active on that and keep doing it. So I learned the rules. And since then, I've been just like following the rules and doing what is necessary. And I'm always learning new ways, like create videos, reels. And yeah, so far I'm happy. But I become a content creator in science without knowing that there was such a thing, which I'm really glad I did.
Yeah, and it's so cool that social media has given, you know, a people platform to share what they actually love, and people actually interact with you, and you get to know that. And you get to connect with the people who have like minds, right? You get to know people who are into science communication and who can call you on their podcast, who can call you for interviews and all that stuff. So that's really cool. So, Mika, what do you love the most about communicating science?
So I think what I like the most is there are no rules. I mean, there are, of course, some rules, like, you know, like, you should always like share a reference when you're talking about something.
Yeah.
I mean, there are these sort of unspoken rules, of course, but the way that you communicate, no one, I mean, that's completely unique to you. For example, I do photography, I go to a lab and let's say I want to communicate my friend's science. And I write a story, I take photos at that very moment because I know the story. So I take the photos knowing the story and I'm kind of creating a composition in my mind. And that's kind of my art. Like, no one else can do it because people can do it better than me. That's fine.
Yeah.
But this is like my unique way of expressing myself in a scientific way and also a little bit maybe artistic way. So in that sense, this is like the most unique thing that I do. And I really don't care about the result of it that much. But doing this gives me so much pleasure. Like I make a post and sometimes I read the post like 20 times and each time I'm like, oh, this is a cool post. I'm glad that I made that, you know? So
Yeah.
it's like, I don't know, if like a film producer, they're watching their movies again and again. I publish a research paper. I read it once after I publish it. And I never read the research paper again. But for the post, from time to time, I come back and I'm like, oh, I post about this like 2 years ago. And sometimes I forgot that I post, and I'm still learning something new from my previous post. Maybe I'm like a fish in that sense, that like I forget what I post. But if you post very frequently, that also happens.
Exactly. And that's why consistency, that Instagram tells you to be consistent, because then you can be a better creator later on. Same way academia tells you to keep publishing so that you can become a better researcher. So I think, yeah, there are the
exactly.
parallels here between social media and academia, which is cool. So Khan, like, what advice would you give to people who are starting out in science communication from your end, especially, you know, in a, you want to say in a developing country, because like a lot of my listeners are from India. So yeah.
I think for one of the coolest thing about science communication is you don't need any tools for that. You know, you just need like a mobile phone. And then we are equal. So you can create reels, you can create whatever you want. The only difference is, of course, here in ETH, I can go to like some really good laboratories. They do cutting edge science and so on. I can communicate on that, which is an advantage, but this is something that I don't do that much. But the way that I communicate is I see an insect outside, I take a photo, I identify, I try to understand what species is there. I read about the species. If there's something interesting, I have that thing inside, like I have to tell this to other people. Even though it's not so interesting maybe for other people, I find it interesting. And I tell my story, simple as that. So they don't need anything. They just need a mobile phone and internet. Like, but what I recommend is combining it with a hobby. My hobby is photography. Others' hobby could be knitting, could be cooking, baking, and makeup. For example, I had a friend, she was doing makeup. So she was like drawing some cells, organelles to her face. And she was like describing what was happening inside the cell by drawing all the receptors and everything. It was very entertaining because she was like an artist in terms of makeup, but also a scientist. And when you combine these two things, this is what makes you unique. Otherwise, you can be a science communicator. What you do is like you read something, you summarize it, and you just put some slides and you write the summary of that. This is not interesting for people. And I just recommend people being unique. I mean, if you want to do science communicator, if you want to become a science communicator, you have to first create something, generate something. This could be either with a photo, with a drawing, with an illustration. For example, if I knew that I was going to go to this path, I would learn more about illustration. I will learn more about how to make animations, because if you tell a story with animation, that's much more powerful than photography. But I didn't know about those things. So this would be my recommendation. Always improve your hobbies and combine your hobbies with science. And try to be creative, try to be different than others.
That is perfect. I think that concludes whatever I wanted to ask you. Then thank you so much for coming, Khan, and talking about SciComm, talking about your research, which is really cool. And I'll link your work in the description of the episode so that listeners can go check you out. And of course, like, you can follow Khan on social media platforms. I'll be linking that in the description. Thank you so much again for coming and speaking about your research, about all these things. I think the people that are tuning in, it's a very crisp episode. I feel like that. And whatever you said maybe resonates with a budding maybe a neuroscientist who wants to become a science communicator, or maybe a science communicator who wants to be a neuroscientist. You never know. So thank you so much
you
again
never know.
For coming.
Thanks a lot for having me. It was a pleasure. So I send my love to India and all of your listeners.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye.
Hopefully, this conversation serves as a reminder to everyone to take a break when they need to be truthful to oneself and follow their passions and likes. A big, big, big thank you to Khan for coming to my podcast and speaking about his work and all things Psycom. Hopefully, I shall see you in India soon, and I wish you all the very best for your postdoc work. And to you, my dear listeners, thank you so much for tuning in. I request you to go follow Khan on social media. Links are provided in the description of this episode. And as always, stay warm, stay safe, and I wish you a very, very happy new year. Thank you for being by my side, and I hope I keep bringing more impactful conversations to the world next year as well. And remember, you're stronger than you think you are. Bye.